always, hold on to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I am your host, Zach Moore, and today I'm joined by Mr. Mike Krause. What's up, Mike?
Hello, sir.
Good to see you, man. You missed our Justice League conversation.
I'm sad to say I did.
So, you know, we're not going to talk about Justice League again.
Oh, good.
But I'm going to give you just a couple minutes off the top. What were you know, you have been a critic of the DCEU, as it's been called. This is the fifth movie.
Gosh, yeah.
So you've been a critic of most of the films up to this point. Yeah. Didn't like Man of Steel.
Yeah, but oddly enough, that movie has grown on me.
Yeah, after what's come after, for sure. Didn't like Man of Steel. Batman v Superman. Really didn't like Batman v Superman.
Like, no.
Suicide Squad. What did you think about Suicide Squad?
I didn't like Suicide
Squad. Yeah, that's
Squad.
One of the worst movies of all time, in my opinion. Then, and then Wonder Woman.
Loved Woman.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
okay, cool.
Loved it.
And then so Justice League. What did you think, man? What did
it
you
just, a did solid meh.
Solid meh, okay.
Solid meh. But I do like what they did with Superman.
Mm-hmm. You like what Josh Whedon, as we call him here on this podcast, Josh Whedon. what Josh Whedon did with Superman.
I like, yeah, minus the mustache stuff, but yeah.
The mustache. So would you be excited for Justice League 2 if they ever made it? Which is looking more doubtful at this point.
I doubt it, but yeah.
We talked about last week, so I would love to go see a second one. It's just none of the cards right now. It looks like, it did not do well opening weekend. It made $94 million, about, I believe. And it cost about...
$300? Or is it more?
I mean, it's more than that, but with reshoots and advertising, like, it's got to be one of the most expensive movies ever made. And it by far did worse than all the other DCE movies. It did worse than... you look back on all the DC movies recently, I'm sure Green Lantern did better than it on opening weekend. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so like,
I'm sure the Dark Knight trilogy all did better than it. Well, maybe Batman Begins didn't do better because that was cracking it open. But I'm pretty sure of all these somewhat respectable DC Comics movies that have come out in the last 20 years, it did... I bet Batman and Robin had a better opening weekend.
I think it did. I think it did.
Because it just... I don't know, man. I like the tease at the end. You know, despite Eisenberg's Lex Luthor, which is its own conversation, I did like, okay, Justice League, because that makes sense. If you're making a Justice League trilogy, this is the formation of the team. The second one, you fight the Injustice League or the Legion of Doom, whatever you want to call them. And the third one, you fight Darkseid.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be a second. There's going to be Wonder Woman 2. It's coming no matter what.
Which I'm cool with.
Yeah, and she's going to come out in the Cold War. That's what the word on the street is. I did like how they kind of retconned that. And she had a conversation with Bruce. She was like, I always fought when I was needed. I'm like, yeah, Wonder Woman sequels, disconnected from this other stuff. And then Aquaman's already done.
Yeah, just I sitting can't on do anything shelf. About that.
But I doubt, regardless of what they think of it, I don't think they're going to, quote-unquote, try and fix it. It's just going to be what it is. James Wan's a great director. I look forward to seeing what he has to, what he brings to the table with Aquaman. It might be good. Who knows? It's just, I have no idea what it's going to be like. Because we really didn't get much of a gauge on Aquaman in this movie.
Yeah.
So those two were coming, and then Batman is its own conversation. There's all this talk about recasting.
And sadly, Superman is probably out of the conversation for a while.
Oh, he's done. They're never going to make another Superman movie.
That breaks my heart.
Until WB goes bankrupt and Disney acquires him, we will never see another Superman movie.
Which is why I was excited to watch this with you.
which just brings us back around to the first and best feature-length Superman movie that they're...
Absolutely.
They hit their pinnacle in 1978. They haven't come back. So we're talking about Superman the movie. Why are we talking about it? Well, you know, first of all, it's both of our favorite superhero movie of all time. But there's actually a logical reason why we're talking about it. Out of nowhere, a couple months ago,
it wasn't that long ago,
Warner Brothers Archive announced that they were releasing the extended cut of Superman the movie, which is the three-hour television cut, which came out in the 80s. So it's more of the producer's cut. It's not a director's cut. In the 80s, when they premiered movies on broadcast television, they used to pad them out a lot. So you'd see this with movies like the 70s King Kong or even Halloween. They actually filmed extra scenes.
I bought the Halloween one. I thought that was
pretty
cool.
The TV cut or whatever.
The TV cut.
Where they add scenes from... It's interesting because they were making Halloween 2 when they were making
the TV cut.
Yeah, so they filmed some more scenes then. So this was a big deal in the 80s for like a feature presentation. That ABC Sunday night movie or whatever, Monday night movie. Star Trek the Motion Picture was like... So what they would do is They would find every last scrap of footage, put it in the movie, and then charge the networks, hey, we're going to give you 2 nights of entertainment. I get it. It's a great business move. I don't fault the South Koreans. Say what you will about them, because Richard Donner said a lot about them.
Yeah.
But they're good to business people, you know. And they did the same thing with Superman, too. And we're all sitting around hoping that someone's going to find that on a shelf. Because this was just found on a shelf.
Jeez.
In the Warner Brothers archives. Like, oh, what's this? Hey, this TV cut.
Someone might want to see this.
They cleaned it up. You know, all credit to them. They didn't just, like, slap it on a disc. Because they could have been, when you first heard about this, like, okay, this is going to be a DVD. It's going to be 4x3, right?
Yeah. Well, that was my first thought. What's the 4x3 or...
Yeah, so what we got, though, we got a full HD remaster in widescreen, which no one had, even the people who had gotten the bootlegs of this over the years, like VHS tapes recorded off TV, transferred to DVD. You know, I'd always thought about getting these one day if they had never come out, but they came out. So basically, there's three versions of Superman the movie. There is the theatrical cut, which is 2 hours and 23 minutes. And then you have the, here's the deal. So that's the theatrical cut. That's what came out in theaters in 1978. But then there was a special edition that they showed on like HBO or whatever, and on also normal television. And then when the DVDs came out, like in the early 2000s, you know,
right.
It was they called that the extended edition. But that's why it gets that's why it gets confusing, because that's not the extended edition anymore. That's called the special edition.
The special edition.
Or it could be called the director's cut, the Richard Donner extended cut. You know, he had authority over that. And that was...
But that was a pretty big release. I remember they released that in theaters.
Yeah, there was a limited theatrical run for it, and there was trailers for it. I remember there was a really cool trailer for it. I should post that, because it's like dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Like, it was a big deal back when they had that. And that one was, I believe it was 151 minutes. And that had several scenes that were not in the theatrical version. And that was that's the one that I watched the most,
because too.
Especially when it came out on DVD, just over and over and over again. That's the one I would watch. So that's the one I'm
most
familiar
with. Well, it's a superior cut, I think.
Yeah, of these three versions, I think it's definitely the best cut, because
absolutely.
as we found in this cut. So this cut is 100. So this special edition now, not the extended version.
Right.
So there's the theatrical cut, 2 hours and 23 minutes. There's the special edition, which is 151 minutes. And now we have the extended cut, or the TV cut, 3 hours and 8 minutes.
Jeez.
So, this was fun to watch.
It was.
And we've seen, it's crazy to see things you've never seen before. It's kind of like, it's like when Star Wars special editions came out. And it was like, oh my, there's a new scene with Han Solo. This is crazy. And now you look back and, like, first of all, that Jabba the Hutt is terrible. Terrible CGI. It could be, and they updated it for the DVDs. I think it's even worse.
Yeah. Every time they re-release them, it gets worse.
But, then you're like, not only is this a weird scene, it ruins the reveal of the Millennium Falcon, right? Because there's, like, this whole build-up, like, you see it and the music crescendos and they walk in there and Luke's like, what a piece of junk.
Yeah.
And that's the first time you see the Falcon, right? Trivia, the satellite dish is missing from the Falcon in that shot.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. A foreshadow to when they lose the satellite dish in Return of the Jedi. But anyway, this random scene, like, sees his Jabba, like, looking around for Han Solo, and there's the Millennium Falcon. Anyway, terrible scene. They were smart to cut it out. And also, they took dialogue from it, put it in the Greedo scene, and they didn't change it back, and they put the scene back in, so literally Han Solo says a couple of lines at the same time. He's like, even I get bored sometimes. Like, he says, that's exactly the same thing. But you see these movies that you grew up watching, and there's new scenes in there, and it's really a unique experience, you know? And so that's what this was. It wasn't any, and we're, you know, we'll kind of talk about Superman the movie as we go here, but we kind of want to focus on this being the extended cut, and we'll talk around those extra scenes. We can talk about our opinions on everything else, but because that's kind of the emphasis there. And you know, this is in between seasons 2 and 3 of Smallville. Christopher Reeve, of course, was on Rosetta in season 2. He's in Legacy in season 3. Leave some stock dialogue from him in season 4, Sacred, to the episode that Margot Kidder refused to appear in
because
she thought it was in bad taste to be the person who tells the Kents that Dr. Swan died. I don't know. Maybe, I feel like her agent explained it to her wrong.
Yeah. <it's> like... Well, but she's also hasn't always been on the best page of reality.
Yeah, that is a true statement. that was, 1978 was also Margot Kidder's pinnacle of her career as well.
Right.
So it was, you know, love Margot Kidder though. She was a lot like Carrie Fisher. You know, all these 80s genre actresses have a lot of personality. Karen Allen,
Indiana
Jones. So, They're all, they could all kind of cut from the same cloth, it seems. You know, just kind of, you know, rough around the edges, but still like kind of genuine people. And I, even though they had their problems, like I respect that. You know,
they're so, straight shooters.
Yeah, they're straight shooters, exactly. So, but seriously, Margaret Carey, you should have been in Smallville. And then they, I love how they just like, you know what? Fine, she was a villain. We killed her off, like off screen. You see Jason T bury her. He's like a leg. So that's how they write her off. But anyway, so Superman the movie, my favorite superhero movie of all time, yours as well.
Absolutely. Actually,
it's the gold standard. It's literally and figuratively the godfather of the superhero genre. And, you know,
Mario Puzo.
There you go. Mario Puzo wrote the script. You know, people don't realize that. So this had legit, you know, creative people behind the scenes on it. Actually, Richard Donner, you know, a big time director. He probably most famous in the mainstream for the Lethal Weapon movies. Also did The Goonies. I mean, he's legit. You know, he's a great director. And, you know, you talk about the cast. Marlon Brando as Jor-El. Like, that was a huge get. Him and Gene Hackman kind of, much like Jack Nicholson legitimized Batman 89.
Yeah.
Marlon Brando and Gene Hackman legitimized Superman the movie. And, but there's some funny behind the scenes stuff with him. First of all, Marlon Brando, he's not in the movie very much, right? Do you want to guess how many days he worked on this movie? And then how much money you got paid, Krause? If you had to just
Well, I know he was the highest paid actor. Mm-hmm. I know that. And I know he was notorious for reading his lines off of cue cards.
Yes.
So that tells me he wasn't on set very long. Yeah. I'm going to guess what? Maybe a few weeks?
Well, I'll just quote IMDb here.
Okay.
Because that's where I got this information from. The always reliable IMDb trivia section. Yeah. Never a wrong fact on there. But Marlon Brando was paid $3.7 million plus a percentage of the gross for 12 days of shooting.
Jeez.
The payment also covered the sequel, which was shot at the same time, which is its own conversation.
Yeah.
Brando did not appear in the sequel because he'd sued the Salkinds, claiming they had not paid him his percentage of the profits. He ultimately received about $14 million for 10 minutes of screen time. Wow. That is highway robbery. That is just like Jack Nicholson getting, like, he got a percentage of the profit, an absurd amount for Batman 89, and he got sequel rights too, like, and then also like all the merchandise.
You got royalties off merchandise.
Yeah, that's why you like almost never see any like Jack Nicholson Joker stuff, because it's like it gotta pay out the nose. Like, there's that DC, I think it's called the Multiverse action figure line that came out recently. You got Michael Keaton, Batman. You have Danny DeVito's Penguin. Was there a Michelle Pfeiffer Catwoman in there?
I don't know.
But
you don't have. They didn't do the Joker.
Oh no. They're not paying that kind of money. Maybe when Jack Nicholson passes away, they'll deal with his estate. Because that's what when Marlon Brando passed away in the early 2000s, that kind of opened up the door for Bryan Singer to get the footage to use in Superman Returns. But then that also opened the door for the Richard Donner cut.
Sure. Which I'm more appreciative of than you.
Of course, of the two. Of the two, I'll definitely take the Donner cut over Superman Returns. But we'll talk about Superman Returns down the road in this podcast. But anyway, so ridiculous, Marlon Brando. Also, you got to say, it was his idea to wear the Superman crest.
Oh, really?
I can only assume, being an egomaniac, he was like, oh, if I'm in a Superman movie, I want to wear the S or whatever. So that was cool, because that's an idea that was not in the comics before.
Huh.
He just, and we see it now. It goes on to this day to Man of Steel. It's like a river.
Yeah.
Like, where did that come from? Like I understand it means hope, and they want to like push that into the beginning of Justice League. They're like, it winds like a river. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know. That just came out of nowhere. That sounds like they're referencing something that you know, but you clearly just made it up. But yeah, the Superman S being a Kryptonian symbol that he wears stays with pretty much every iteration of the character since. I mean, Lois and Clark came with his stuff on the ship, like in his blanket. Smallville, obviously. Well, Smallville was actually going to go for a different approach. It was going to have the 8, the Kryptonian 8.
Right.
And then he was going to, like, customize it with the S, which I'm like, oh, that's smart, because it's, like, between two worlds. But then Bryan Singer came along, Superman Returns, and said, no, this is the way they did it in the 1970s. We have to do it this way. So whatever.
Sound bitter.
It's all good. Well, we got some time before we get to Superman Returns. Man. But anyway, moving on. Sticking in the good old days of the 70s. So Marlon Brando, and you're right, he read a lot of his lines off cue cards. Apparently he told Richard Donner that it kind of, there's a freshness that can't be recaptured if you know the lines already, so he preferred just to use them in the moment, you know? And apparently, you know, one of the on the first day of filming, he told Donner, he's like, hey, let's go ahead and film the rehearsal because we might use it. And that's what they used in the film. Like,
really?
I'm not sure which scene it was, but there was definitely some... there's a method to his madness because he's one of the greatest actors of all time.
Yeah, and he made it work.
Yeah, I mean, he's still the best Jor-El. I mean, Russell Crowe was great. Kind of a badass Jor-El, yeah. You know, fighting General Zod and all that stuff. And then Terrence Stamp, the voice of Jor-El, was great, mainly because he was Zod, speaking of Zod. But yeah, I mean, they got all that to say. I think he was worth every penny. Yeah. I mean, he really was delivering these monologues of just, you know.
Well, and he legitimizes. It's so easy to forget now with all these superhero films coming out every month that back then, you know, no one really gave it.
Yeah, Batman the movie was like it, and it's like Adam West and all those guys, and that was fine for what it was, but it was a niche, and it was kitsch, and it was a parody, you know, of itself, and which is fun, but this was to be taken seriously, so yeah, Marlon Brando, can't say enough about him, and then, you know, in the extended cut, and we can kind of just talk around it here and kind of free-flowing discussion, but there are some extended, see, there's some stuff that was extended for the DVD, or the 2001 DVD release and all that, that's how I'm going to refer to it, and then there was even more additional stuff for this, obviously, this, you know, 30, there's like 30 more minutes. There's like 45 more minutes from the theatrical version.
Yeah.
And 30 more minutes from the special edition. So however you want to do that math. But speaking of, you know, before we get to far into it, we have to mention that you and me and Lance and DeMonte, and then I think Juan was there with us too, you know, from...
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I think there's five of us, right?
Yep.
Okay. And we went... This is over the summer because Lance was back in town, mm-hmm. and Studio Movie Grill was having a summer series.
Yeah,
and it was like Superman the movie. I'm like, oh man, they're showing Superman the movie. I've never seen Superman the movie on the big screen. I've been fortunate enough to see both Tim Burton Batman movies, so I kind of equate all these. Like, I got to see Superman the movie. Sure. I got to see Superman 2. Those are the four I need to see before I die on the big screen.
And it was also the theatrical cut, which I had forgotten about since the new DVDs came out.
I think like. My family had a videotape of it when I was a kid.
Right.
But that was it. So we go and we see like, oh, it's a theatrical cut. Okay. So we get there. We have to talk about this. So we get there. We sit down. And I swear to God, like the DVD menu pops up. Not the Blu-ray menu.
Oh, no, yeah.
Because I know what the Blu-ray menu looks like. And this is the DVD menu because I have the DVD set. And you just, they said like, they choose the theatrical. Can't you just choose the extended cut? So you see him choose that. You see him choose the menu. And then the movie starts and there's like no audio.
Yeah,
and they have to stop and restart it. And it was kind of a cluster. It was only $5, so I guess.
Yeah, but still.
But when I go to a movie theater, I expect to see an actual, you know, film of some kind.
And your seats at home are much more comfortable than the office chairs.
So that was
Studio Movie Grill.
This is kind of making up for that. So sorry for all y'all who went to that and couldn't. Because literally, Cross and I just watched it. Just
that's true.
We literally just watched the extended cut. So that was our. I'm not going to count that as me seeing Superman on the big screen at some point in my life.
I don't either.
I'll have to see it again for the first time.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was our most recent time seeing it. Of course, you watch these movies a lot more when you're a kid, so I don't watch this stuff as regularly as I used to. So that wasn't too long ago we had seen it, but that was a theatrical cut. So there's a huge gap. So that is completely thrown us
a lot
off.
More B-roll this time.
Because we were sitting there watching, we're like, was this in the DVD special edition, or is this new? A lot of the stuff that was new we can immediately identify, but some stuff you're like, I don't know, this could be, because there's not a lot, there's just a lot of extensions to scenes. Yeah. There's a little chunk in here, and we'll talk about that, of truly scenes that we'd never seen before, like at one after another after another. But outside of that, everything is just little extensions here and there, and so it's just jumping right into it. The beginning of the movie, I think, you know, this is probably going to be sacrilegious to a lot of the hardcore Superman the movie fans, but I think we could have gone without the comic book opening. Like, in the decade of the 1930s, the city of Metropolis, and all that, and the Daily Planet, which looks a heck of a lot better than the one in the movie.
True.
It's the classic Daily Planet. It's the one from the comic books. It's the one you see in Smallville, for example, Superman Returns.
Right. Huh? The big globe.
But the globe. That's, you know, there's a helipad because it's the 70s, and I guess. I don't know. But I think you could just cut that out.
Well, I think it's easier to say that now, with once again going back to how the comic book movies are so, you know, dominant right now. Mm-hmm. Back then, you have to remember a lot of adults that loved Superman hadn't really had a good. I mean, when did the George Reeves?
That was the
that
the
ended
50s.
In the 50s, right? Yeah. So it was a good 20 years.
Yeah.
Where I think
almost 30 years. Almost 30. I guess from start. Yeah, 20 years. Yeah.
So they're trying to remind people that this was at one point a comic book.
It's a big, yeah. And they go, they have the theater, they're trying to add legitimacy again. Like, look, we're in a theater, the curtains open up, there's a kid.
I still like it.
It's fine. I mean, I like it and all, but I'm just thinking about it. Like, I'm just thinking editing-wise, because I'm like, man, this movie, first of all, it's too long.
Yeah, well, if I had to pick between that and Superman walking through fire, bullets, and ice, I would have chose that, yeah.
Well, but yeah, so we start out with that, then we go through, the opening credits are great. There are some odd, there are two or three odd audio glitches.
Yes.
And they're kind of left over from the TV cut, and no one can understand why they didn't just, like, that'd be the easiest fix in the world. Just take the soundtrack and correct that. But as we go through the opening credits, and I will say, you know, as much crap as I gave Superman Returns on here, that was one of the greatest things about seeing Superman Returns in the theater was seeing the John Williams opening music absolutely. And the credits. So the music is the best part of that movie, as is the plane rescue, and then the opening credits. Even though they go a little too third rock from the sun with them, and Superman Returns, like a planet's floating around. So this is just, I believe that these opening credits were like some kind of they used a microscope on different like cells and all that stuff. So it's like microscopic imagery over space imagery. And it was very surreal and unlike anything you'd seen at the time. And then the opening credits were a big deal back then. Yeah. You know, nowadays, it's like Christopher Nolan doesn't even tell you the title of the movie until it's over.
That's it.
By the way, this is called Dunkirk. But anyway, so you go through that, and you get to Krypton, and this is no fantasy, right? That's the first thing Jor-El says, so it kind of gets you in that mindset. That's a cute kind of meta first line, if you will. And this is the dialogue here between like Jor-El and the General Zod, the Phantom Zone guys. Like, that's great stuff, you know? And you're like, oh, man, setting up a sequel. And originally, the intention was Superman the movie was going to end on a cliffhanger. And Superman was going to throw one of the missiles into space. It was going to break the Phantom Zone open. And they're like, free! And that was going to like, Superman 2 coming soon. But all this stuff happened with Richard Donner, which we can talk about at the end. And that, they changed some stuff around. And that didn't happen. So it does feel like this kind of odd, like what is this in here for?
Yeah.
Or it's like, oh, it's a brilliant setup for a sequel. But it establishes Krypton, the Phantom Zone, all that stuff. Now, and then after that initial trial sequence, we get into the extended stuff. Some of which, again, like some of this is in the special edition, but a lot more of it's in the extended cut. Mm-hmm. And like it's like Jor-El's talking to the Council of Krypton, and they established that, you know, he found the Phantom Zone, and there's some more arguments with the scientists and all that. So that's cool. And then I believe there's a little more dialogue with Jor-El and Lara and the baby. I'm not sure. Again, I'm so I've seen so many different versions of this. It's kind of blurred, but I know for sure. The most ridiculous thing, and I completely understand, and I'm glad they cut this out. I don't even know why it's in there. In the special edition, there's the Kryptonian executioner talks to the council members. Yeah, and he's like, there's a overuse of energy in Jor-El's quarters. And like, go.
Take care of business.
The law must be upheld. And they go sit, and then he looks like he transports away. Unless that was a hologram. Who knows? I don't know what the technology is like on Krypton. But then we get like, I think three times we see him like running through the halls.
I pictured him on a Segway, just
yes. And like they put a GoPro on his head, and he's on the Segway. Yeah. So weird.
Awkward.
He's like rushing through the halls, and then eventually you do see his eyes, and he gets killed by like when Krypton starts exploding. But I'm like, that was
bizarre.
Yeah, but
why would you show that if you didn't have a scene of him like, you know, maybe last minute breaking through the door?
Yeah, like and that makes its inclusion in the special edition make even less sense. Because there's no payoff to it.
Yeah.
Like, at least in this version, you see, like, oh, he died. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
There is a... Oh, so that was just bizarre and comical, honestly, and I'm glad they took it out. Now, they... Look, if you're listening to this podcast, I assume you should listen to Superman... Watch Superman the movie. If you haven't, do whatever you need to do and watch it immediately, because we're going to spoil the whole thing.
I'm pretty sure people listening to your podcast
I would hope so. Seen... But, I mean, you know...
I would be surprised if they haven't seen the extended cut.
You know, Dr. Swan from Smallville? He was Superman once. You should go check it out.
Yeah.
What? Anyway, Bridget Crosby. That was Margot Kidder's name.
Bridget Crosby.
And then Mark McClure played Daxor from whenever he invented Brainiac.
Yes.
Terrence Stamp was Jor-El on the show. So, Annette O'Toole, she wasn't in this movie, but she was in Superman 3, and she's Martha Kent. So lots of connections there. But anyway, so we're just going to talk through it here. So the disruption of Krypton, very extended.
Too much extended.
Way too extended. Like, it's like, Zack Snyder shot this.
It was kind of comical at one point. It's just like, you felt like there was a bit somewhere.
And this is when we're starting to see, like, okay, this is clearly, they took every scrap of usable footage and squeezed it in to this movie. Because, like, you pretty much see, we started to notice, like, it's the same thing from a different angle. Like, because obviously, for big moments, like, they shoot it with a lot of coverage. They could probably have three cameras on it.
Right.
And so, like, okay, they use all three angles. You saw some interesting fashion on Krypton. Of, like, somebody had a hood on at one point.
Yeah. And neon. I felt like I saw some neon.
Yeah, I saw, like, some. It looked kind of like Tron for a minute in there. So weird.
Some ravers on Krypton.
And then, yeah, it just kind of overkill, dare I say, of them. And then there's more of, like, Jor-El and Lara running around. And Susanna York, who plays Lara, is interesting. I remember her having a bigger role in these movies because of the Richard Lester Superman 2.
Right,
because
Superman 2.
Superman talks to his mom, and she's the one that takes his powers and stuff. And that's crazy because she's actually kind of a bigger, well-known actress, especially, you know, in British stuff. And she has, like, a blinking and miss it role in this movie. But anyway, more of them running around. And then the ship takes off, and then something in the DVD, something, again, the terminology, right? Something in the special edition, but not in the theatrical edition, but it's in the special edition and the extended cut, is the Phantom Zone kind of following the ship, which I thought was cool. That establishes, oh, maybe they got caught in the wake of the ship, and that's why they go through the six galaxies, or they mentioned they pass through. And then we get there, though, and, you know, and just in general about the movie, I think, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in Superman the Animated Series, and like the pilot, right, before, you know, we have the Krypton story, which is, I think, honestly, you know, I know this was kind of sacrilege when I was talking about Superman the movie. I really like that origin where Brainiac is the computer.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, that's like...
Oh, like he...
Can we get a movie of that, please?
Yeah, I know.
And that's what Bryan Singer wanted to do with Superman Returns, too. He wanted to have like a flashback to Brainiac being, like, part of this universe.
Well, he should have done it with Superman Returns.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, why didn't you make that movie first? Don't save stuff. Justice League.
Yeah.
Don't say, oh, Darkseid's come later. No, he's not coming at all.
No, that yeah, no he's
that
not.
That Boom Tomb is no, closed.
Yeah. Thanos is coming, but that's about it.
Coming. Oh, man. So my point there is they put Kal-El in the pot. Like he's like a kid, he's like playing with crypto. As I remember, he's like a kid, you know? And they put him in suspended animation and send him off to Earth. And I think that's the way you do it.
Yeah.
Because if we're thinking about this, like, we've got this baby growing up in this spot, it's going to be full of poop and pee, mm-hmm. and just disgusting, and they're floating around, so it's going to get all over him. And what does he eat? What sustains him? You know, it doesn't make any sense for a kid to grow. Like, okay, the whole thing about Supergirl, and that's why she's younger than Superman when she shows up on Earth one day, is because she's in suspended animation in her stupid pod, right? That's the whole point. I wish more versions of Superman would do that. I guess it's more iconic to put a baby in the ship than to put, like, a three-year-old in the ship.
Sure.
Like, it's the whole Moses thing, right? Putting him down in the raft down the river. But I don't know. I think they got it right there, because we were thinking about it. And then Jor-El's talking to him about, like, all this stuff. And
and he doesn't know English yet.
He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know. He's a baby, you know. And he mentions Einstein, who's not even alive yet. But anyway.
We're nitpicking, Zach.
Now we're nitpicking. It's the greatest superhero movie of all time. But, as I tear it apart. So they crash in Smallville. There's a few more lines of dialogue between Martha and Jonathan while they're fixing the truck. And then I think we laughed at the Segway Krypton Stormtrooper guy, because it was just ridiculously shot. But we really laughed at the extended shot of the Kent truck driving away.
The spaceship just sitting there.
It's like, all right. So it's like Glenn Ford. I said, okay, Glenn, go ahead and drive. And keep rolling. And keep rolling. Did we get it? Yeah. Okay, that's what it feels like. The only thing, as we were last starting to laugh about it, I did notice, like, the little light in the ship started
dimmed.
To go down. I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. And we know that at some point, he went back and got the ship.
Yeah.
Because it's in the barn in this movie. So, didn't see that extra crystal they find in Superman 4, though. That didn't seem to be in the ship.
Yeah.
The mom's crystal. Or crystal. Yeah, didn't get Marlon Brando back for Superman 4 either, so we got the voice of Susanna York on that one. So, but yeah, they that was a weird addition. And then we cut to this Marvel High School football game. I always thought it was a practice, maybe in the theatrical version, but it looked like it was a game, because I only saw one team out there. But they're like, heck of a game, guys, or something like that. And we see little bits more of Clark being the team manager and Lana being a cheerleader and stuff. And what do we get to hear? We get to hear the voice of Jeff East.
Which I
what'd you think
was
of that?
Interesting, because it sounded perfectly fine to me.
Yeah, I was expecting him to sound like, I don't know, like me or something. Hey, guys.
Yeah.
You know,
this
goofy, high-pitched voice.
Hey, Lana!
But it sounded fine. Like, I could have, I would have totally bought that guy.
I would have, too.
As a young Chris Reeve. Yes, they had to. They gave him, like, a prosthetic nose to match Christopher Reeve better. They gave him, either they dyed his hair or they gave him a wig to kind of give him the right hair color. Christopher Reeve's hair is not even black, it was brown, you know?
Yeah.
Which we see more in Superman 3. But there was no need to dope Christopher Reeve over this guy. Which I feel, now I feel kind of weird because I always thought, oh, that's really smart. Because I always say whenever, I've always said that about, like, don't do CGI on people. Just cast a lookalike and then have the actor voice them.
Yeah.
But I'm like, for this young guy, like, I could totally, there was no need to dub him over. I expected it to be so far off that they had a need to.
But I did too.
You
but
cut
it was
between
perfect.
The lines.
I
and
was
like,
so
oh.
taken aback by how fine he sounded.
And he was like, well, I guess I better clean all this up. Or whatever he said. It's just the
well,
two
but
of three
it
lines.
Also makes me wonder, like, what would it have been like? Why didn't they just have Christopher Reeve
play
lose a few
part?
Pounds well, and then play it himself?
Well, you do see his weight fluctuate a lot.
That's
and,
true.
And that's something they actually get theatrical cut fixes because there's a lot of these extra scenes. Like, I love the scene later with Jor-El.
Right.
But he looks nothing like he does at the end of the movie.
In New Yorker,
And yeah, I thought about that too. You know, like Christian Bale in Batman Begins, right? And when he's like Bruce Wayne or whatever at the beginning, you got him in like these heavy sweaters, and it's before he worked out and like became Batman, so he looks like a thinner version of himself. And I don't know, he could have pulled it off, but I do like the change. Like, he goes into the fortress and he comes out literally
a different man. He's a man.
So I like that, but at the same time, you're right. Because Tom Welling looked the same over that period of time, over from high school to
Superman.
Yeah,
that's true.
He didn't change into somebody else. But,
10 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I do wonder if that ever crossed their mind. Be like, okay, Chris, before you start working out as Superman, you know, let's go shoot all these scenes, and then we'll go shoot our Marlon Brando scenes and Gene Hackman scenes, and we'll come back to you. Because like Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
Like, they shot all his Peter Parker scenes first, and then he went and worked out forever, and then it's that classic, like, the next day, waking up, he's like, whoa, hey.
Yeah. But I mean, like, it's just like, I wish they had gone one way or the other and not, because I've heard Jeff East complain before, or at least I've heard
Jeff
that
East
he was
is
unhappy.
An interesting guy. Have you ever heard the Superman homepage podcast with him?
No.
They interviewed him once, and it was like his birthday, but he called in and talked to them, but he was like at a bar with his friends.
Oh
man, they... anybody go check that out. It's totally worth
it.
I'll send it to you, Krause, and okay. I'll let the rest of you guys find it for yourself. But the Superman homepage, they have a podcast, and yeah, he called in to talk to him. He had some fun things to say about working on Superman the movie.
Yeah,
I'll
bet
at that.
He did.
But anyway, yeah, they never called him to be on Smallville, did they?
No, so, they didn't.
But so there's a few more, and you know, I felt these scene extensions here in Smallville was like actually kind of informed the character of Lana a little bit more. She's like, I think you're the swellest guy in school or whatever. And he's like, oh, thanks, Lana. And then they see, like, you know, she gets kind of carried away with all the cool kids. And she, like, there's some shots of her just looking sad and in the car. Like, oh, man, we shouldn't.
She regretted leaving Clark behind.
Interspersed between just shots of them driving. Just shots.
A lot of shots of driving.
If anybody has seen Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is one of my favorite shows, one of their most infamous episodes, and what people say is probably the worst movie they ever covered, was Manos, Hands of Fate. And the movie starts out, it's called Manos, Hands of Fate. And literally the first 5 minutes of the movie is just these wide shots of this car driving to the country. That's exactly what this felt like. It was just like, okay. And go.
Yeah.
It's just, and they're padding a complete pad. But hey, they got to fill 2 hour-and-a-half time slots. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, back in the day when ABC, when this premiered, they had a two-hour time slot one night and a two-hour time slot the next night. So they had to have an hour-and-a-half of actual content and 30 minutes of commercials. So every scrap of footage is being used here. There's a little bit more of Clark running with a train, and then we get this scene, and it's not the theatrical. We see the people. We don't have this extra dialogue scene. We see Kirk Allen, who was the original live-action Superman, mm-hmm. in the Superman serials. We see Noelle Neal, who was makes a little cameo here. And I like this cameo better than her Superman Returns cameo. How about you, Krause?
Yeah. A little less creepy.
Yes. And the line that gets me is like, you've shown me pleasures. I was like, I didn't need to hear that.
Oh, especially now, knowing everything we know about Kevin Spacey.
That version of Lex Luthor, man.
Oh, I really don't want to watch that movie ever again.
Well, I got a few more years on the podcast before I get to that one. So anyway, she's on the train, and then this little girl is Lois Lane. She's like, oh, hey, mommy, daddy, I saw a boy, you ran faster than the train. Well, first of all, Lois, I always feel like she's older than Clark. I mean, she always has that kind of like, she's been the Metropolis a few
she
years.
She should
she's been
be.
Around the
yeah,
block.
I agree with
she's
that.
She's won a couple
she
Pulitzers
be.
Or whatever,
yeah.
right? And Clark's this young guy on the street, and that's why they get partnered up. And pretty much every single interpretation of Superman. And if you cut that out of this version of, you know, of Superman the movie, then you can still assume the same, because Lois, she's established. True. She's got that pimpin' penthouse.
She does. Boy, howdy. That's got to be the best penthouse in Metropolis.
In 1978 New York, like, how expensive would that be? But anyway, it's odd to see her, like, as a little kid. And it's supposed to be a cute little cameo, and I get it, and we're thinking way too much about it. But that's I mean, we have a podcast about this crap. That's what we don't get paid to do, to talk about this stuff. So, yeah, that was just, I'm glad they cut that out in theatrical. And as we talk about these changes, I'm pretty much going to say, yeah, this was good or this was bad. So that was, I could have done without that. But then we get Clark, he goes home with Jonathan, of course, has that great scene with Glenn Ford, and you are here for a reason, and then he drops dead from a heart attack. And I don't know, I go back and forth on the heart attack thing a lot. I think it works in this movie. It's perfect because it's the whole point of his father dying. It's something out of your control. You can't control everything. Right? Yeah. That's the whole frustration of Superman. That what urges him to do what he does at the end of the movie. In other versions, it's usually a heart attack as well. I don't know why we have to always kill Jonathan Kent. It'd be nice in some versions. I know in Smallville, like, they thought season 5 was going to be the end at the time. Like, okay, let's wrap this sucker up. And they're like, oh, well, we got 5 more years? And they'd always find little ways to bring back Jonathan, either in a dream sequence or whatever he was in season 10, Ghost Dad in season 10. So, Man of Steel, he dies in the tornado. I like that it was different. But at the same time, it's a different kind of message than what they're saying in this movie. So anyway, it's equally valid. And then we have the funeral. That's a great scene there. He has all those powers, all the things I can do. I couldn't even save him. That's a great emotional resonating moment that carries on to the end of this movie. And, then we have an extra scene here. I'm pretty sure all this is in the special edition. This is nothing new for the extended, but it's like the scene, the Cheerio scene, as we'll call it.
Yeah.
Because Martha has this absurdly large box of Cheerios.
That's always facing the camera.
I think my favorite moment of it is when she puts it down on the table, and it's like there's a ray of sunlight, and I'm like, Cheerios! Yeah. Like, you thought the Mercedes product placement was bad in Batman v Superman. Yeah. But, and that's a scene just before she looks out and she sees Clark out on the field. He's like, oh, I gotta go, And then the car stuff was kind of funny with this all, but this is where it really gets absurd with the extended footage, because we get this footage of Clark obviously going to the fortress, going up north. I'm pretty sure they use the same take a few times.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's walking up to the North Pole, and
it's like 5 minutes of just Clark walking.
Well,
through
there's
snow.
There's a couple of shots in particular. There's one where the camera's like zooming in, trying to focus. Like, doesn't even know where the stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah. Are you talking when he was walking towards the camera?
That's the other one.
Oh,
there's two. Like, this one is like he's on some ridge somewhere and they're looking for him.
Yeah, like, where's Waldo?
Yeah. And then the other worst one is he finds his spot, pulls out the green crystal. A nice touch that we both notice. He still has the red, blue, and what's Superman's other color? Yellow.
Yellow.
Blankets, purple? which assumably makes his costume. It's always it's implied. It's never really. I like that a lot better.
It's
than
very
like,
subtle.
Like
very
Man
subtle.
Of Steel, like, look, here's the costume. Even Smallville, look. Oh no, actually, Martha made the costume in Smallville. So suck it, Man of Steel. But anyways, like Russell Crowe's
Lois and Clark too.
That's right. Russell Crowe's like, here, the ship's 2,000 years old, but put this on, it'll fit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Clark throws the green crystal. Which, let's talk about this for a second. Why is it green? I've had so many people, it's kryptonite. No, it's not kryptonite. Okay, it is a green crystal. I guess
green? Why there must have been a reason why they chose it as green.
Well, it's a striking color. I mean, red, yellow, and blue are Superman's colors. They probably wanted something different.
But surely someone at one point was like, people will mistake this for kryptonite.
Because guess what? Kryptonite is in this movie.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we were talking about this recently. There was a guy that came on Pawn Stars, and he's trying to sell. And this guy was so uninformed. I was so glad. I don't know the Pawn Stars guys' names. I don't watch the show religiously, but one of the two guys knew what he was talking about, and I'm so glad he did, because this guy comes in there and tries to sell the original Christopher Reeve Superman costume, quote unquote, the only one they ever made, because there's one costume. A guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about as far as movies go, and then he tries to sell that and the green crystal. He calls it kryptonite. And then the other guy's like, no, that's not kryptonite. It's the computer that makes the fortune solve. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pawn Stars. We're going to watch more episodes now because I respect your knowledge of Superman. But no, I mean, it's a common misconception. I don't know. I just don't know why they did it. Mm-hmm. Because they could, maybe a blue crystal? Because, you know, in Smallville, when
I think a blue would have worked better.
Well, in Smallville, they combine my favorite plot line where they combine the Stones of Power. And it becomes the Superman Pentagon. Like, I call a Pentagon. Not a pentagram, there's a difference. And he throws it, you know, it's blue. And I'm like, that's fine. Because red would be like, red is, implies also weakness because of the red solar rays.
Yeah.
Maybe yellow, but then yellow looks kind of weird as a crystal. It looks kind of gold, so I don't know. But the green, I grew up watching this movie, so the green crystal is so iconic to me. I don't question it, but I do question it now because it's so, it's just like, here, it's a Green Lantern, right? His weakness used to be yellow. So don't give him something that's yellow, right? I mean, this doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway, he throws the crystal, he forms the fortress. Then there's this shot of Jeff East. Literally, it's like out of focus the whole time. He walks into the camera. Yeah. Looks like, I'm like, why did you use this shot? Could we have gotten these 7 seconds from something else? Could we have seen Lex Luthor drive that remote control car for 7 more seconds and not use the shot of Jeff
East? Or more test marker footage would have been great. Fine by me.
We do get to see a lot more of her in this and a lot of interesting outfits. So he goes into the fortress, and this is extended as well. There's one shot. I swear it's like they pick up on it later in the other two versions, but this one is like literally Jeffy's like walking into the frame. Okay, and go, Jeff. We see him go into the frame, climb up on the steps, and we see him like, it takes him a little longer to like find the control. Like there's a shot literally of like just the controls just there.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, there it is, you know. And then he talks to Jor-El, and there's new dialogue from Jor-El here, where he talks about a few more things. We don't see Jor-El say this. We stay on these reaction shots
That's true.
Obviously, they didn't do special effects for this because they cut it out in advance. But it's just funny how he just keeps talking, and we just see these more cuts to Jeff East just looking and listening.
And I picture Richard Donner just saying, hold that look, hold that look.
It's interesting.
It's interesting.
Nod. Oh, you're intrigued. It's inquisitive. Yeah. So then we start the what turns out to be the 12-year journey through the Fortress of Solitude. They don't extend anything here, which is shocking. You think they would. What do you think about him being in the fortress for 12 years like that?
I don't... Where are you going with that?
I don't know.
I'm fine with it. I think that's great. He's going off to college.
There's a couple ways to look at it. Like, this is the Superman origin I grew up watching, so I just accept it. He goes to the fortress. He gets all his knowledge. Although other versions, he does kind of do like on-the-job training. Like Smallville, right? It's like on-the-job Superman training. Other interpretations, he travels the world. Like in Lois and Clark, he traveled around the world. And in comic books, he traveled around the world. And I don't know. I have no problem with that because Krypton played such a large role in this origin that it makes sense for him to be there for 12 years
to study.
Then he comes out, he's Superman. And so it's that classic shot where we see, you know, Jor-El's mask turns around. We see Christopher Reeve. He, you know, flies toward the camera.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Metropolis, right?
Yeah.
But we don't cut to Metropolis.
No, we don't.
We cut to, like, these random aerial shots of New York City circa 1978. And it's like, oh. Okay, you start to appreciate the editing a lot more. I mean, I have always appreciated it, but I appreciate it even more when it's changed.
Yeah.
Because it was like a hard cut to the taxi cab or whatever that Clark Kent is riding in to go to the Daily Planet. But instead, it's like, look, it's New York.
Yeah.
And another shot of New York. It's like, we didn't need... Again, take those 7 seconds from Lex Luthor driving the remote control car. So he gets out of that. I think there's a little bit more of Jimmy, like this, I guess who I can assume is an intern at the Daily Planet. It's got a really tight red shirt. Because, like, the chief...
He's trying to break out of his intern role by pushing all of his duties
to this other guy.
On him onto someone else.
Yeah, he's, like, trying to feel big about it because Perry White keeps telling him to do stuff, and he, like, repeats it to this other guy. And there's like, a couple of extended moments of that.
But I did like that. I liked all
of
Jimmy.
Of course you did,
because
it's Jimmy Olsen, your favorite character.
Yeah, and Snyder took all that Jimmy Olsen away from
Krause's me. Krause's favorite character, Jimmy Olsen. Jimmy Olsen does have some good extended moments in here. I'll say that. So I'm sure you like that.
I appreciate
all
that
very
much. Of it.
It all plays as normal. I love Christopher Reeve. This is his first scene as Clark, and he just owns it from the jump.
Definitely.
I think he could be a little less bumbling, just a little less. Because if you're trying to just like fade into the background, breaking a bottle and whatever he's doing, I just think he could have dialed it back a little bit. Because the whole purpose of Clark Kent is to blend in, and that's not blending in.
No.
But it's a charm to watch, and his performance makes this movie.
Definitely.
We were talking about this earlier too, and it's like, I miss the Secret Identity stuff, and that's something we've, you know,
talk
about Smallville. He isn't Superman yet, so he doesn't really have the bumbling identity. Tom Welling refused to wear glasses. I mean, it's hard enough to get him in glasses, God forbid the suit, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the glasses thing, so he didn't really have that dual identity until the very, very end of the last few episodes of Smallville. Man of Steel universe, DCEU. I mean, we never see Clark. I mean, we see a little bit of Batman v Superman. They talk about another extended cut, the Ultimate Edition. We see him being a little bit more Clark Kent. But he's kind of like more like the George Reeves Clark Kent, where he's like just Clark with some glasses on.
Yeah, yeah.
I like a Clark Kent that could stand up for himself, but still, we need some...
Have it be a different character.
Because it's supposed to be, you know, a disguise, yeah. Right? But that's the joy to watch. There's all these lines that are like, any more at home like you? Oh, no, not really, no. And it's like, oh, it's great. And then, I mean, he saves her from the mugger and all that stuff. But then, you know, we talked about this editing that gets ruined. There is some editing that gets improved, or at least a cool shot where, you know, after the mugging that Clark saves her from, is a great moment, which Patty Jenkins...
ripped off.
Paid homage to in Wonder Woman. No, she, the Superman,
and she
the movie,
did well.
The Superman, the movie of its day, Wonder Woman. They get in a taxi cab, Clark and Lois, and then when the pans over, we see Otis walking by.
The same shot.
So it's a continuous shot. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. It's really well planned. But then we see Otis walk for like 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
It's really ridiculous. Like, I've heard, you know.
They had to have reused some shots in that.
Especially when they go in, like, Grand Central Station. Like, you can see all the same extras are walking by. Like, they're using different takes of the same shot.
It's ridiculous.
They really need to fill that hour and a half time slot, I guess. It's funny, you hear, like, it's a 3-hour extended cut of Superman the movie. You get all fired up.
10 minutes of that's Otis walking through the Central
walking,
Station.
Walking, driving, and,
And ice crystals.
Yeah, ice crystals for you.
Destroying Krypton.
I feel like the Fortress might have been a little extended too. But yeah, walking and driving is like, is the extent. Superman
true.
The movie, the walking and driving cut, pretty much you can call this. Because, you know, these police officers are chasing Otis. Lex Luthor's a wanted man. We really don't know why, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, we just know he's part of the criminal underworld or whatever. And they know Otis works for him, so they're following him. And, yeah, it's just even the cop, like, radioing in, like, he does it, like, 3 times. Like, I think he only needs to do that once. And then, yeah, it's comical how long it gets. And especially you got the goofy music, dum, dum, da, dum. Like, it's literally just a comedy of that. And then we ruined, like, not that it was, like, some epic reveal of Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, but it's kind of like a Blofeld thing where you see his hands and he's controlling these, the secret door and all that, right? But then in this extended cut, there's just a shot of Gene Hackman just sitting there at the desk. I'm like, no, you ruined the whole reveal. But let's talk about Gene Hackman. What do you think of Gene Hackman for Lex Luthor? What do you think?
I mean, for the time, I think it was great. I definitely think we have yet to see the ultimate portrayal of Lex Luthor
on the big screen.
On the big screen,
because Michael Rosenbaum is the ultimate portrayal.
I would agree. I absolutely would agree.
And we got to see him as President Lex, plot line that we need to see.
No, like, looking back, he did a better job than Gene Hackman did.
I mean, I'm sure people think that's second. And Gene Hackman, maybe. Gene Hackman does a good job doing what he's supposed to do.
He was hired to do.
But he should not have been doing this.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
But he's a great, and him and Ned Beatty. Like, they're great actors, and then playing off each other. Like, as we were talking to each other, watching the movie together, we're like, you know, this is not what it should be, but it's hilarious.
Yeah,
like,
it's
so they make it entertaining. But so Gene Hackman, there's a big, you know, I don't know, are we calling it mustache gate yet with Cavill? I don't know, but you know, there's all this talk about Henry Cavill's mustache. Well, Gene Hackman had a mustache when they were making Superman the movie, and he refused to shave it. So Richard Donner, before he met him, he goes to his meeting. Richard Donner has a mustache. Say, hey, guess what? If you shave your mustache, I'll shave my mustache. And Hackman's like, okay, all right, that's cool. I respect that. So he got him to shave the mustache because he sure as hell wasn't going to shave his head or wear a bald cap.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Michael Rosenbaum, 7 years, man. Thank you very much.
Dedication.
So Hackman shows up to shoot, and Donner still has his mustache. And Hackman's like, hey, I thought you were going to shave your mustache. And the Donner peels it off. It was a fake mustache. I'm like, well played, Richard. But that's a fun little story about that. I mean, can you imagine? Like, today they just went, sure, Gene, we'll CGI it out.
We'll CGI, yeah.
Can you imagine?
Ugh.
But yeah, I think this is not the interpretation of Lex Luthor. But you got to remember, this is pre-crisis Lex Luthor.
Sure.
You know, it's funny because back when we were kids and younger, just in, like, you know, high school even, there was pre-crisis and post-crisis, and that's how comic books were understood. Now there's like a crisis every freaking year. so that, I mean,
gotta sell those comics.
There's been Zero Hour. There's been you know, Flashpoint. There's been Final Crisis. What's that? Rebirth, right? So over and over and over.
But I think this was an accurate portrayal of the
pre-Crisis, like Suther. He wasn't defined. He was just a mad scientist kind of guy with some evil schemes, stealing those cakes, as those memes say, you know.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the businessman like Suther. Well, you know, what came first? Did Kingpin come first?
You'd know better than
I. From Spider-Man and Daredevil? Because if so, I'm pretty sure John Byrne ripped off Kingpin for his Lex Luthor. Big, bald guy who's like a business guy, reputable. But anyway, that's the great Lex Luthor that everybody knows and loves. So not the Lex Luthor we really wanted, but the one we needed. No, I don't know. But it was a great performance. His wardrobe was a little questionable. His pimp clothes and whatever he was wearing. But you know, it's fun, and his big real estate team and all that, which Bryan Singer zeroed in on for some reason. Another huge missed opportunity, Superman Returns. We get some more extended scenes here with Feed the Babies, which this was a deleted scene on the original DVD release with the special edition. And he has some tigers down there in the sewer, and he has Otis feed them. And this comes back around again at the end, and just, these scenes are just like, why is this in here? You know, so that they, you know, we move on from those. And at that point, you know, it's just little bits and pieces. You know, we get to Superman, the big save of Lois and the helicopter is great. That's one of the greatest moments in, dare I say, movies in general, much less superhero movies. But
and it still holds up well.
Yeah, because it's so practical. Like you see, it's real people and a physical helicopter, and like, you know, today it would just be so CGI. It's like, I don't feel the stakes anymore in these movies because it's like you know it's all fake.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, there's just something tangible about it. And just it's an intimate moment, but it's a huge moment. And, you know, the crowd's reaction to Superman, you know, they're not saying, you're an alien, get out of our planet. And they're like, oh, look, someone's doing good. You know? There was a little tiny moment at the end of this where, like, the reporter's, like, making sure, like, did you get that? And the camera guy, he's like, yeah, I got it. Like, that's just a funny, that's a real funny moment that was in this edition only. So, a little stuff like that. There's a few more shots of Superman flying around. You know, after the helicopter rescue, then I don't know if there is or not, but I feel like this police chase, right, with the cops and robbers and stuff, I feel like because there's so much driving already in this movie, I feel like they added some more. So
I felt like everything that was just not dialogue was extended by.
Yeah, just like, oh, we got some more shots of those cars. Yeah, put it in there. Then he saves the cat, Frisky the cat.
There's definitely more cat shots.
Definitely more cat shots. Definitely the actress, the little actress playing the little girl, was obviously British. And now her voice
changes a little bit.
unlike Jeff East, her voice definitely changes back and forth in these extended scenes, you know. And he's like, oh, don't be too hard on Frisky. He just, you know. It's just a funny extended moment. And then we do all this, you know, we do all this great Superman stuff. And then, obviously, we go to, we go back to Lex Luthor in his pool, swimming around. And there's some extended parts here with Otis, and he doesn't know what a myth is.
Yeah.
He takes a picture of
Of himself.
Yeah.
While trying to take a picture of Miss Tessmacher. Yeah.
Who does not, she's, like, just over it. And then there's a great, you know, gag where Lex is like, hey, next time put my robe in next time when I'm out of the pool. Because you know, Otis comes and brings Lex his robe, and he's still in the pool when he does it. And then the theatrical version, and even the special edition, she's like, oh! And then the scene ends. But then this one, he's like following him and trying to squeeze the water out.
Trying to drain it.
I'm like, it's kind of funny. I don't know. Like, I'm so conflicted on
this.
Well, stuff.
That seems like just a cool improv moment that, you know.
They just like, keep rolling. Good job, Ben. So, again, you know, we were joking about this. Now, why do they fired Richard Donner? All this footage. It's like, what are you doing? How long is this taking you to make this movie? So then, you know, you get the great scene in Perry White's office. And Jackie Cooper is great as Perry White in this. You know, I think a reason that Perry White has been downplayed in more of the recent movies, especially Superman Returns. I like Frank Langella as an actor, but they downplayed him because we had J. Jonah Jameson, J.K. Simmons. It was like,
yeah.
I mean, that's what that is, but it's like you feel like you're ripping it off, but even though it was not, you know, Superman came first. That's the whole irony of all the DC stuff. They came first, but they're so slow to get it out to the public, the general public, and they think you're ripping something else off. So, yeah, he's great. He's very funny. You know, all his scenes with Clark and all them. He's like, what's his favorite ball team? Kent. And he's about to tell him, and he keeps asking people stuff. And then, you know, Superman leaves Lois that note, like, at your place at 8, you know, a friend, because that's what he called her. Like, I'm a friend. And We get that, and then we get the, you know, it's a really good scene between Clark and Lois, Superman and Lois. I'm so used to Smallville talk, I'm calling him Clark. But, you know, but again, we joke about her pad. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, yeah. Like this rooftop terrace. And
it's a sweet pad.
But their little interview scene is cute, and they're a little, maybe a couple of extended scenes. Oh, this is the line at all, like, I noticed here. I don't think it's in the other two versions, but Superman, he shows up, and he kind of looks in Lois's place, and like, oh, nice place. And I immediately thought of Batman 89 when Bruce Wayne comes in. He's like, nice place, lots of space. And the Joker comes in. He says, nice place, lots of space. Which is, I don't know what Tim Burton is saying there. Like, he said, oh, they're both the same side of the same coin or some weird Tim Burton stuff. But whenever I see a new place or somebody, like, I see the place for the first time, I usually say, nice place, lots of space. And then, you know, people like you would be like, oh, I know what you're saying. But other people are like, oh, sure. Okay. All right. This guy's weird. But
I have a small apartment.
I had a laugh for myself whenever I see somebody's new place. So if you guys ever meet me in person and I come to your place, that's exactly what I'm going to say. So it's a cute moment. This scene, and Margot Kidder looks her best here.
Yes.
And she looks kind of like Demi Moore, I think, in this scene. And I always thought that. And it's a cute scene. This is a nice little, you know, you see the chemistry between the two of them. And he tells her way too much so that he can't see through lead. It's like, what are you doing, Superman? What are you telling people this stuff? But this part, just in the movie in general, I'm never a big fan of the tone poem or whatever you want to call it, where she's like, can you read my mind? Mm-hmm. Like, they could have used, I mean, all the shots are fine, but just take that out. Like, just use me. And originally, I think they were going to have her sing it, but they're like, yeah, let's not go that far. Thank God. Because that would have been, maybe if they would have had her sing it, they would have cut it out. But since she just talked it, they didn't think it was that offensive. We did notice a couple of shots where, like, the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly from the day.
From the day, yeah.
These were extended shots for this extended edition during their flight. But I'm like, look, guys, like, this isn't, I don't know, maybe in your 1980s TV set you couldn't tell, but we can now in HD that those shots don't match. But, you know, they come back, and this is one of the greatest moments in the movie where, you know, Superman, he takes off her balcony, he says goodnight, and then there's no cut. The shot just pans over, and we see Clark knock on our door. I assume it's some kind of like rear projection thing. I don't know.
Most definitely, yeah. No, when Superman leaves, mm-hmm. you can tell it's a different quality than
when he was just.
There's
there,
a grain to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's an extra layer of grain. Yeah, but then Clark's just like, "Oh, well, sorry, I'll have our date tonight. I'll show you the time of your life. I'll shove off," you know. Although when Lois, like, she scheduled a date with Clark and Superman, like, again, I don't really like Lois in these movies.
Yeah.
She's kind of selfish.
She is. Selfish bitch.
But you didn't like the fact that he was just going to tell her his identity, huh?
No, no, no. Not to the first date, man. Come on.
He's like Bruce Wayne in those How It Should Have Ended videos. He's like, hey, I'm Bruce Wayne. You want to know my big secret? He's always telling, yeah, the joke is he's always telling all his girlfriends he's Batman. That's true, but it was a great moment where you see him like transform into Superman.
You do. Well, yeah, you do get to
and
see
back
Christopher
into Clark.
Reeve.
It's a great Christopher Reeve like showcasing his acting there. Pretty much. There's only a couple more scenes in the movie of like Christopher Reeve as Clark Kent and that whole thing. And it's funny how you think about a lot of what you think about him and all the whole relationships are more from the sequels than from the original movie. You
know, that's
him and
true.
Lois and two and even three, you know, with Lana. So. But yeah, but then we cut back to Lex Luthor, and the movie just really stalls at this point. And it always did in the original versions, the other two versions, but it really stalls.
Yeah, oh boy.
There is about, I kid you, guys, about 3 solid minutes of this remote control car. Yeah. And
driving. Nothing's happening.
Meadows, Sands of Fate. And then you see, like, I swear it's the same shot, like from a different angle, of like the inside of the car. And it's the remote control car that they used to crash the car to get... to stop the army missile so they can come out and it just takes too long. But again, it's funny to see all these guys together. And then we see JR from Dallas come give Miss Tessmacher CPR or whatever. And then we see Lois. I keep saying Lois and Otis. The 4 letters end in is. There's an O in it. Okay, give me a break here. We see Otis put the numbers in to the missile, and we can clearly see. I mean, maybe I was just paying attention this time for the first time, but you can clearly see there's supposed to be 4. And he only puts in 3. He's all proud of himself. And you know, you see the numbers. And then again, this is more extended. Lex shows up. He's the ambulance or whatever. There's more back and forth. And meaningless extended stuff. I don't know why this was even shot, but it's there. So then they get in the van, they get by the ambulance, and Lex is like, hey, Otis, just, not that I don't trust you, but I don't trust you. Like, tell me what you did. He's like, okay, I put in, like, 11, 7. But he says 2 numbers, then he says 117. And Lex is like, what about the 4th one? He's like, fourth one. He's like, whoa, wait. It's supposed to be 11 and 7. Mm-hmm. And And he's like, oh, see, my arm's too short. He's like, oh, you want to see a long arm? Like, yeah. It's stupid, but it's entertaining. So they have to. So apparently that you see that, and this is where we get more and more scenes we had never seen before. That missile goes off to the Air Force base or whatever, Army base. And then the Navy has another one. So they go, Lex has another plan. Like, they didn't plan to do this, but this is always one of the weakest part of the movies for me, the hijacking of the missiles. He could have just said he did it through technology, but it's the 70s, so there's no internet. So he couldn't have done that. But he has his mobile home, and they have this whole other thing where they stop the Navy. And there's some cute little moments there with him and Otis and the Navy guy. He's, like, eating this chocolate, and he's like, oh, he has insulin, and keeps the blood sugar high. Just little lines like that. Then Miss Tessmacher goes and changes it. But she also does not change it to the coordinates Lex mentioned, and it's only 3 of the 4.
Yeah,
so I'm
there's
like,
still a fourth screen that doesn't have a number.
You made such a big deal out of this. So I don't know. Maybe we're not supposed to pay that attention, but I give them credit because when Otis did it, the numbers match and all the thing with Lex. Yeah. So, because I was always under the impression that they captured both the missiles, and just because he's Lex and he's a dick, he sent them with the Hackensack, New Jersey, to kill Miss Tessmacher's mother. But it seems like that was just
that was coincidence.
A coincidence, and the other one, I don't know. So,
yeah,
bad coincidence for Lex, because that's why she saves Superman. I would like to see his own plans fight him in the end.
Right.
But there's just a lot of scenes. Like, this section of the movie is, quote unquote, the most extended, I guess, I would say.
Which is unfortunate, because it's this section I really don't care about.
It's like, you know that part you really didn't like to begin with?
Yeah,
here's even
more.
Oh, man. So, then we go back to Lois is, like, out in the desert with Jimmy. Jimmy's taking pictures of the Hoover Dam. We find out the Hoover Dam is a very evil thing, according to the Native Americans that live there. It's a weird subplot with the Native Americans.
Yeah.
Where, like, they don't have water because of the Hoover Dam, and that gets paid off again a little later. But then, you know, Clark goes into talk to Perry White again, another good scene between him, and then he gets the ear message from Lex Luthor. Now, you know, something we skipped over entirely. Somewhere in all this extended footage. Yes, actually, it's after Lois and Superman's first night together. They're reading the newspaper, Lex and the villains, and he deduces where Kryptonite came from, and it's complete BS.
Like from Lois's article.
Yeah, again, this entire section and everything involving Lex Luthor's, like, plans here, like, these parts of the plans are BS to me. Like, how do you find, oh, yes, Krypton exploded in 1948, and so it stands to reason that meteors from there would have come here. Yeah. But how do you know what planet they're from? How do you know the radioactive to Superman, right? And they would kill him. Like, that's way too big a leap of logic for me. I don't know how else they could have done it in the framework of this movie. Because there's other ways, like other shows, obviously Smallville's, it's all about the meteor rocks, as they call them, right? But then Superman the Animated Series, I keep quoting them. That's, again, the DC Animated Universe, man, always did it good. I love the episode where they find Kryptonite, and it's like Superman stops a museum robbery, but he, like, collapses next to a museum exhibit, and, like, Lex Luthor, like, studies it. Like, he sees the security footage. I'm like, yeah, that's smart, you know? I don't know what they could have. Maybe they could have done something like that. I don't know. But the Kryptonite here was a fail. Like, and they go to Addis Ababa and get it. But anyway, that was in there. So anyway, Superman hears the message from Lex. He goes down there. Now, this sequence here, it's in the special edition, also in the extended cut. The bullets, the fire, the ice. I mean, I love this, right?
Oh, yeah, but I think most people now have accepted that. See, I think most people by now, ever since 2001 or whatever,
2001,
I think, like, the extended cut has become the more...
The de facto cut.
The de facto cut now. And I wish there was more stuff with that with this one, but it sadly, there's just more driving
Lex
around.
driving, walking. More walking, Superman walking through. Now, people criticize this because, and it's true, if you had to cut this movie down in 1978, you can totally remove the sequence and it works seamlessly. You don't know anything's missing. He goes down there and he busts in Lex Luthor's door.
True.
And also people are like, oh, but they already know that bullets don't hurt him. But yeah, I thought two things. One, I thought this is just Lex's security system. Like, he's got fire, he's got bullets, he got ice, you know. Because you see Otis walk through all this stuff in this extended edition, right? These same walkways. But also, I think, and maybe this is me reading too much into it, giving too much credit, I think it was Lex kind of lulling Silverman into a false sense of security. Like, oh, this guy thinks this stuff could hurt me.
Maybe,
whatever.
Yeah.
Because when he gets there, he's not even thinking. He's like, oh, this lead box. Let me open it up. Oh, there's Kryptonite in it, right? So, anyway, I love this iconic Superman stuff. And they had to animate all these little bullet impacts on Superman. Like, that cost money. Again, no wonder they fired Richard Donner now. Well, they were going over schedules, I believe, on these two movies. So, anyway, Yeah, that's a great moment there. You know, all the back and forth between Lex and Superman is great. Again, Gene Hackman, he's great in this role, as written. You know, not as the iconic Lex Luthor that we want to see, but
he did what he was paid to do.
Yeah, that's right. And they shoot the missiles off, and we were like, why are they using actual warheads?
Yeah.
Like, what is this test for, right? <It's> just, if it's to test the missiles flying around, then you don't need the, you know, you don't need the actual nuclear warhead in the missile. So bad call. So then they get hijacked. And then you get these really weird extra scenes where, like, these army guys are calling each other.
Yeah.
And they're all nervous and stuff. And then the guy calls the president.
And he's busy golfing his way 6 feet underground.
Yeah, he's like in a sand pit.
6 feet under. And it looked like he was in a grave. Maybe there's some political commentary on Carter with some of this stuff.
Yeah, and then when Superman saves Air Force One, that's another thing with, like, oh, there's the whole, again, there's, like, this extra scene of, like, all the pilots talking about, like, the weather report.
Yeah.
And, oh, you know how old president there likes his film. I'm like, what? I don't know. It's just weird stuff. Then, of course, you know, Lex's explanation about what his plan is. I think this is the best supervillain plan in any superhero movie. It's genius. It's like, I bought all this crap land.
A profit, so I'll murder people to do it.
Yeah, and he just doesn't care, you know. And that's the thing, like, people say that, you know, the opposite of, like, true good is true evil. Like, I don't know, I think true apathy is also an equal opposite. And he's not doing it just because, you know.
Just because he's a bad guy.
Yeah, he's doing it because it's, like, his profit, man. It's nothing personal, it's just business, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, where I'm thinking all around here, that reminded me of The Godfather, which reminded me of the guy who plays Jor-El in this movie, Marlon Brando. They have that extra scene after his first rescue where he talks to Jor-El. That's also, it's not exclusive to this edition. It's in the extended, the special edition. And I like that because it keeps Jor-El in the movie. Now it's where Christopher Reeve looks really skinny because that was like the very beginning of the shoot.
Right.
But I like how I was like, oh, look, he's still talking to Jor-El because that, like in the theatrical version, like after he becomes Superman, there's no more Jor-El.
Yeah.
So get your money's worth out of that Marlon Brando stuff, right? So anyway. So Lex explains it all to him. It's a genius plan. It's terrible. Like, I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
But something that... Because it's nice that there's not a blue beam up to the sky, right? And every freaking superhero movie these days,
true.
Right? It's just a logical down-to-earth plan. Superman has to stop the two missiles. There's two missiles. He breaks out the kryptonite. He hides him in the load box. Superman doesn't see it coming. He throws him in the pool. Superman's so weak, though, right? He's like, oh, I can't. I can't. Fast forward to Superman Returns, he's lifting a kryptonite continent with a shard of kryptonite in his back, mind you.
Yeah.
I guess he built up a tolerance because here, Superman, he's got this personal, I mean, it's his first exposure to it. This little piece of kryptonite, he can't even, like, you know, get out. By the way, Lex Luthor's lair, awesome set, right?
It is.
They don't make him like that anymore. Like, I would love to, like, go, like build that, like, in a man cave. Like, here's my,
yeah.
I have a swimming pool and all that stuff. They don't make him like that anymore. Turns out that the second missile is going to Hackensack, New Jersey, which is where Mrs. Tessmacher's mother lives. So she, you know, she feels bad about it and saves Superman. As they're watching the missiles, we see this map of the United States. It's the worst map of the United States I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, Texas alone.
Yeah.
It looks like somebody drew, like some right-handed person drew it with their left hand.
Yeah, and had a stroke halfway through it. Yeah.
That's terrible. Like, you see the line of, like, New Mexico going through Texas. Yeah. Like, could we not have just bought a map? Like, is it
well,
that?
Well, they used all the budget on these scenes of driving and walking.
Anyway, so we nitpick because we love the movie, but when you watch it as much as we do, you know, you start to see things like this. But Superman, he takes off. Something else we realized during that is that he puts this huge hole in Lex Luthor's roof. Like, if he does this every time the Daily Planet, like, that he jumps, like in Superman Returns, right? Because
it's just. Pops a hole in the ceiling.
Yeah, because when we, after we hear Lex Luthor's initial, like, hello, Superman, this is Lex Luthor, talking to him on that frequency, which is really cool. I like that a lot. Again, how would he know that? But whatever, it's cool. You see all the dogs reacting to it. It's the worst transition to Superman because he jumps out the window and he just fades into Superman. Like, look, give me a twirl.
Yeah.
Give me something, right? Say it, Jim. That's a bad outfit.
Bad outfit.
Excuse me. It's a brilliant moment. It's a brilliant moment, right? But, yeah, like, how many holes are in the roof of the Daily Planet when Clark takes off the elevator shaft? That's not suspicious at all. But he takes off. We see some extended stuff with the missile here. Actually, he tries to stop the missile right in front of it, and it swerves to avoid him. Okay, cool. That explains, like, why didn't he just try and stop there and catch it? Some good, like, you know, for the 70s, this is great special effects. All the opticals of, like, you know, racing through the desert and all that. You know, some shots look better than others, but it's all good. We see Lois drop off the Native American guy, continue that plot line, see the plight of his village. They're out of water. But we see Jimmy just still taking pictures of the Hoover Dam and all that. But since he promised Mrs. Margaret he was going to do the her missile first, he throws the New Jersey one up in the air, and then he sees the California one strike. So he goes down there, he starts repairing San Andreas Fault. We get a lot of extra footage here of weird, like, studio backlot street. Yeah. Like, the guy jumped out of his window of his house.
Oh, yeah, the weird scene with the houses. Yeah.
That looked like a Universal Studios, like, when you're, like, on Earthquake
Ride. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that wouldn't surprise me if they went there and filmed for, you know, we got to film something for this TV version.
Yeah, so this is, all this stuff I could totally do without. Notice we didn't keep cutting back to these people.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why it's better than the Justice League. This stupid Russian family with, like, I love there was, like, a fan poster where, like, oh, look, they added Superman and the rest of the main characters from Justice League, and it was all of the, it was all Justice League and that little girl.
Yeah.
But anyway, Superman saves everybody, you know, as he does. And he redirects the water, and this gives the Native Americans water, really brown, dirty looking water too. But the horses don't mind.
They don't mind.
Native Americans are like, yay, we got water. An interesting subplot that they cut. Now.
And then he takes it away.
He takes it away. Superman giveth and Superman taketh away because he reverses time.
Because Lois Lane is more important.
Yeah. So, okay, here's the deal. I don't mind this ending. The original ending was he was just going to stop the missiles, and one of them was going to break open the Phantom Zone, and
I still think is a great ending.
Well, yeah, but what are the emotional stakes? Oh, Superman saved the day. You know what I'm saying? So I think, they were looking at the end of the movie, and when they decided, okay, look, we don't know what's going on with number two right now. We're going to pause on that. Let's take the ending from two and put it in the ending of one. And I think it works great because a lot of people say that's what breaks the movie. I disagree. I think it's a great, I mean, just the emotion there with you see him, like, find Lois and she's dead and he's devastated. And, like, those, see, these are quiet moments that work, right?
Sure.
And, you know, he's screaming, like, the best scream ever in movies, right? They're like, ah, and he goes up to the sky and you hear Jor-El and Jonathan. And he's kind of, it's like, you know, it's everything's going through his mind.
Sure.
And he's like, you know, screw it. I couldn't say my dad, I'm going to save Lois. So he doesn't reverse the rotation of the Earth. I mean, visually, that's what we see. I've always seen that as a visual representation.
Of him
going back to
changing
time. Right? And then he's like, okay, I
did
that. Kind
of like Flash when he...
Yeah. So when Flash goes so fast.
I can see that.
That's how I see it. Now, I know it's easy. Everybody makes fun of that with this movie. Like,
But, I mean, it's 1978.
I make fun of it, too.
No. But I just wish if they were going to stick with that with the sequels afterwards, they dealt with some kind of consequence.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And I believe that this was suggested by actually the old webmaster of Superman Cinema. He has had interviews and conversations with the Salkinds, you know, and they wanted to do like a combined epic cut between one and two, and like in the 90s sometime, and WB turned them down. But what he suggested was, you see the time ripples come off the Earth, and that's what breaks open the Phantom Zone. I'm like, oh, that's so genius!
Yeah.
Because that is a consequence of, it is forbidden to interfere with human history. Yeah. You can tell they dial that up a lot throughout the movie. Like, you hear that on the ship,
no,
in the fortress, but there's no, like, okay, what's
no
the consequence?
Consequence to it.
And I guess the consequence is Lois is alive, therefore he gave up his powers.
And
therefore,
she gets really clean, too.
Yes, exactly. Be careful what you wish for, guys. You know?
That's what Jor-El was warning
him
about.
You might
want to
save these girls, but they might not leave you alone,
gonna,
right?
Yeah. Won't get them off your back, man.
Happy now, but I told you.
Yeah.
So he doesn't. See, here's the thing, because the earthquake still happens, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure exactly what.
Oh, no. Are we going to nitpick?
No. I'm just saying, like I think the Native Americans still got their water.
Oh, okay.
Because the earthquake still happened.
He,
you know,
just...
Jimmy's like, he left me on the side of the road, you know? He's... Oh, I like that when he saved Jimmy, he let him take a picture.
Yeah.
Like, that's a nice little Jimmy moment. Again, your favorite character, Jimmy. Yeah. Did you relate to Jimmy Olsen when you were a kid? Is that what you wanted to be Superman's pal? Was that you?
Yeah, I think so.
That's why
maybe,
you get
maybe so.
A bullet to the head kind of hit you.
That's why it hit me in my childhood.
See, but that wasn't the real Jimmy Olsen. It was just, in my opinion, that's a code name for some...
Well, I guess we'll never see the real Jimmy Olsen.
You know, we'll meet Jimmy's younger brother, also named Jimmy Olsen.
yeah. Oh, gosh.
Anyway, Yeah, so I really don't have a problem because he was so emotionally driven at that point. He could go faster than he ever could. Like, well, if you go that fast, we can stop both missiles. Ah, I don't want to hear it. Right? It's an emotional climax to a movie. God forbid it's not a blue beam to the sky and an army of anonymous aliens you're fighting, like every freaking superhero movie. So yeah, I like it. And then, you know, and then when he comes back, Lois is still kind of like bitchy towards him. She's like, where were you? Da-da-da-da-da. And he's like, well, sorry, Lois. I was kind of busy for a while. And then she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. But they have this one little line in here between the two of them, which I really like. She's like, oh, we're a lot alike. We put our work first. I'm like, you know what? That's some good analysis of like their relationship. So again, for all these things we're complaining about, like all the walking and the driving, right?
Yeah. I think there are some good moments.
Like, I think next time I want to watch Superman the movie, because I want to make it, when I watch these movies, I make it an event. Like, I sit down and I watch it. I don't like, let me put it on in the background. So I think I will keep revisiting this longer version because of these little moments that I like so much. And there's more time for bathroom breaks, too.
It's true.
As if I don't have a pause button. But anyway. one of my favorite parts here, and you like this too, is because of Jimmy. Like, Superman takes off. And I think I just turned to you and I said, what a jerk. He should have, like, the car's dead. And Jimmy's like, hey, you can at least call the tow truck. I'm like, yes, Jimmy. And then he starts taking pictures of Lois. And then he realizes that the camera wasn't loaded this whole time.
He has no film in it the whole time.
His first assignment.
He blew it.
Perry White will never. That's why Perry didn't send him on that honeymoon assignment in Superman 2.
But anyway,
so that's. And then we have our final additional scene, which is the bookend to that feed the baby scene. Where Lex is going to kill Miss Tessmacher, which I didn't really like because it's like she should have got out of there when she, you know, saved Superman.
Yeah, when he threatened to nuke her mom.
Yeah, like get out of there. But it just screws up the whole. It's just such a great transition between like, you know, Lois and Jimmy in the desert and Superman dropping off Lex and Otis at jail. And it's just, I don't know, it's just too much and unnecessary. And I'm surprised Richard Donner didn't go shoot actual tigers because, we never see the tigers. Right. But. Anyway, so yeah, that's Superman the movie, man. I mean, our conversation here was more about what we thought about the extended cut and all that. But I mean, I think you guys have picked up our love for the movie.
Yeah.
Through our conversation, any final thoughts on the movie, man? On Superman the movie.
I don't know if I wish to watch it again, but I do appreciate some of the stuff that was in there that I didn't even see on the deleted scenes of the 2001 cut, namely. Jimmy missing his film footage.
Anything Jimmy Olsen related, Cross loves it.
Yeah. What do you think?
I liked it. Like I said, I think this is the one I would put on because I'm not going to watch this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
I got enough Smallville to watch, right?
Yeah.
I don't have time to be watching these movies, but this is, I'm glad that we have this. This is a piece of history.
I am too.
So it's on my shelf with all the, I should add that this DVD comes with the special edition, the longer one. I don't know why.
Why?
Like, I think it's something to do with selling this as a special feature. They can, I don't know. I think
there's
some
thing?
Legal loophole.
Okay.
But it's like, well, couldn't you put the theatrical version on here? Because that would make more sense. Because you have, like, the everything version, and then you have, like, the in-between version.
Yeah.
But why don't I have, like, I don't need the in-between version because I have the everything version. Give me the...
The everything and the basic.
But it's not a George Lucas deal. All those versions are still available, so it's all good. Yeah, that's the thing. See that Lois Lane scene on the train? That's some George Lucas crap right there. Like,
George
hey, look, Lois Lane. Yoda knowing Chewbacca. Give me a boy. Miss you, I will. Anyway. I really like it. I guess, let's just give a letter grade here. I'm not going to say a letter grade for this particular version. Just for Superman the movie, I'm going to give it an A+, and I bet you are too.
Yeah.
I mean, we literally said a few times that this is our favorite Superman movie of all time.
It definitely is.
If we don't give it an A+, then what is an A+ for? Right?
No, I definitely agree.
And we were saying, like, man, this is the last good Superman movie.
Yeah.
Superman 2, there's so much behind-the-scenes drama with it. We'll cover it someday. And so hopefully, they'll come out with the extended cut of that.
Sure.
That's what we're hoping for. We're hoping that somebody finds that on a shelf, because it was the same deal.
Yeah.
Superman the movie, Superman 2, and even Superman 3 had TV versions. And that's why this is available. No one made this. No one put this together. They cleaned it up, right? Yeah. The Warner Bros. Archives. Good job, my friends.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hands off to you because you did a great job with it. Because we're making fun of these extra scenes, but it's seamless. You know, there's a few dialogue changes, but that's from the original. I mean, it was that way. It's nothing they messed up. They make the there's not a jarring change in the way things look between the new scenes and the old scenes. I mean, they did a great job. So that's what we're all hoping for Superman 2 because there's a lot more in that Superman 2 TV cut. That we want to see in widescreen, we want to see in HD. Stuff that even the Richard Donner cut left out because he was like, oh, this is my movie, Richard Lester. That's its own conversation. We can get into all that stuff when we talk about Superman 2, but there is no perfect version of Superman 2. It's still in between somewhere. Much like Justice League. Justice League is like, it's like Superman 2, And it's also like Batman Forever. It's like this weird, like, reactionary thing with a, with like, because there's different versions of Batman Forever too, a darker original version. Yeah. They lighten it up. And Superman 2, two directors, Joss Whedon and Zack Snyder. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, DC, man.
Get it together.
Since 1981, 82.
I don't know. Superman 3 is pretty fun. It's fun.
I will agree.
It's probably the most comic booky. Like, Superman has to fight an evil version of himself and a computer. Like, that's exactly the garbage you would see on like Action Comics in like the 60s, right? Lana Lang's great. I love her more than Lois Lane in this franchise. You know, I'm glad he ends up with her, sort of. If you ignore Superman 4, which you probably should, he gives Lana a freaking huge engagement ring. They're gonna get together, man. It's great. Clark and Lana in Superman 3. So just look at it that way. Okay. But anyway, because Man of Steel was, you know. Like, I liked it, but I wanted to love it, and I just couldn't. You know?
Yeah.
It was fine, but it needed to be more than fine. You know, especially coming off the Dark Knight trilogy. And then Batman v Superman, and then Justice League, and I'm like, and we're never going to get it. Until Warner Brothers gets bought by Disney, we're never going to get another Superman.
Which may be not, it may not be that long
Blade
from now.
Runner and Justice League, their wallets are bleeding right now. So, anyway, I don't know. That's it, man. I mean, I'm glad this version exists. You know?
I am too, and thank you for inviting me to partake in this.
Sure, man. You know, this movie, you can find it. It was $16.99 on Amazon for a while. I'm not sure what it is now, but you can probably find it online. It's been hard to find. It's been the best-selling Warner Archive of all time. That is very encouraging to get other versions too.
Sure.
So next time you're going to buy a Superman 2, and then we'll watch it for
game
that.
On.
So. Cool. All right, Carlson, man, thanks for A-pluses from us both, by the way, just for the record, for Superman the movie. If people want to find you, man, out there on the internet, man, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at PapaKin, and if you
want to hear you talk about how much you hate the DCEU and how much you love Jimmy Olsen.
How much I love Jimmy Olsen,
Perfect. All right, man, well, cool. It's been fun talking about Superman the movie today. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of Standard Orbit, a Star Trek original series podcast. You can find us on Trek FM. That's at Trek FM on Twitter and Trek FM on Facebook. And then also for the podcast itself, you can find us at Always Smallville on Twitter with one S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. We will be doing a mailbag episode coming up soon, later on this month. So please send in some emails and we will read them out on the air. Live. Ooh, on the air.
Live.
Much as we are now. we'll be back next week talking about the Midville episode of Supergirl, which is kind of a Smallville-esque kind of episode. So gonna be our Midville special number one. Hopefully, they'll make some more Midville episodes for Supergirl because it seemed to be a big success. Everybody loved it. There's lots of Chloe Sullivan references, which was some interesting timing, but we'll talk about that. But yeah, me and Craig Byrne from Krypton Side are gonna be talking about Midvale. So
mailbag should be fun.
We're gonna do that before the mailbag. So very well, it's all planned out, guys. So anyway, as always, until then, always hold on to Smallville.